Oh dear.
Really nice.
He's trying to convince him, so he's talking.
Yeah.
Interesting. And the boy is, he's not really listening, but I mean, probably the voice of the father is somehow really soft and nice and familiar.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. I mean, the year, what the memory of the year.
The memories I built up is my grandma is always saying that when her kids were small, that it was impossible that a man would take them or take the or carry the. It's changing a lot. So the role of the father.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So sad. I didn't prepare like any.
Not
an academic, as I didn't want it to be like academic research. I just wrote some keywords, so what come to my mind, and I think that's the objective that of the study of citizen science, the opinions of the normal people, because well, we are actually studying science of education, all of us from Austria, and there is a seminar. We are taking a part of, and we are helping to organize this conference. Some of us are writing also a paper, and we receive a short introduction into citizen science. So it will be not very scientific. So
that's fine.
I hope you are not disappointed.
No. Not at all. I took it for something like an open discussion and also what comes to your mind.
Exactly.
The same for me, what comes to my mind, and let's see
what will happen. So it is very important to read the question so it would identify then the file. So citizen science experiment, talking borders from local expertise to global exchange, 10 of July 2018, 3 p.m. more or less. We are using dictaphone number 2. Our usernames are, my username is Lucia Sikowska, and your username is, or your name is Daniel Meyer. Meyer or Meyer? Meyer. It's like in German. Okay. When I think of border, when it comes to my mind, first of all, I think, of course, of the border between Slovakia and Austria. And I used to live in Bratislava, going to school in Austria. So I was traveling like every day between both countries since I was 13. And I also, my family lives there, it's only 1 hour by car, and sometimes, I don't know, when I go for a party or I go out or for a vacation, I bring my dogs to my parents, so really I'm just moving between two countries. And for me, it's one country. For me, it's like the Central Europe. When I am in Singapore or Spain, I always come back, like Vienna and Bratislava, it's for me like one thing, and I don't notice so much difference. But when some people come to visit me and we are doing sightseeing in Vienna and they go to Bratislava, they're like, whoa, it's a different world, it's a completely different country. Well, I know it is, but in my perception it's not such big. So for me it's actually the border, it's not existent. And actually in European Union or all Europe, I feel at home. I feel borders only in countries where I don't speak the language. So when I travel through Switzerland, through Germany, through Spain, also Italy, I speak a bit Italian, I feel comfortable. I see the change a little bit of the way of being, a way of seeing things, a way of joy. But I really fear the border in the European Union when I pass a country I don't speak the language, especially in France. So when I was living in Spain, sometimes I drove from Vienna to Barcelona, And also the French part were for me a part that I was a little bit nervous, because I knew if something happens, it will be a little bit harder to communicate. But with Spanish, it's better than with English. It's working better. So also in the small villages and so on, we can. And also I can, when I read French, I can understand it more or less because of the Spanish. And yeah, it's, but it was all actually in the European Union, and also in the post-communist countries, actually feel also quite at home, because being a bit Russian, Polish, I can communicate. But actually, and then on North Europe, to speak a little bit English, actually France is actually a country when I get a little bit nervous. I also don't have the feeling that I am a citizen of Slovakia or Austria or Spain. But what I feel that I'm a citizen of Europe. Also, always when I'm outside of Europe, I feel that I'm really European, and that it doesn't matter so much to me where I live in Europe, but I think Europe is the place where I want to grow old, where I feel really familiar. I'm really open for new experiences, and then I really see the frontier to Europe. When I'm in the US, I'm always looking for the city centers with no cars, like these typical European downtowns, or also in Asia, also all the logic is different. Yeah? I always have the feeling I'm missing something. And when I come to Europe, also this historical town gives me the feeling of security somehow, of familiarity. And also how I experience border is every border I experience very differently. For example, when I entered the US, it's quite stressful. I feel the power and the supervision. When I travel into the Russia, I have this feeling. When I travel between the Asian countries, sometimes it's really relaxed, that I really feel welcome, not always. Then I just wrote like some keywords. They came, it was like my personal experience, and now some keywords when I think, like, I try to think like open in the whole world situation, like keywords that I have saved in my mind. And the funny thing is the first words that came into my mind, although I love to travel and I don't feel that I belong to one country, the first word was danger, because it's what in media is all the time, especially in Austria, because of the refugees. And also I have the feeling also with my Austrian friend when we go to other countries like Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, there is always a little bit of fear, because it's like Eastern Europe and criminality and so on. And then it is very interesting, by all these keywords, the duality of the word, that for someone it's a danger, for the other part is opportunity. Also, when I think of border, maybe I feel think of currency or of economical aspects. Maybe it's cheaper or more expensive, or I have to change the money, or what I can buy there. Then, of course, labor. Can I stay there? Can I work there? Where is the better quality of living? Then also in terms of real estate market, how are the prices, if it's good to invest, so maybe this economic part of my, because I was in the banking sector for a long time. I actually studied international business until my master's degree, and then I was in financial sector also in Singapore and here, and now I changed completely. I love philosophy and political science and educational science, and my mind is blowing from different perspectives. I really love it. Like, away from the utilitarian way of thinking to many different worlds that are opening for me right now. Border, of course, language. We always think maybe the first thing, like language and currency, like the people speak a different language, how easy will it be to communicate, and then maybe like two or three aspects. Like one aspect is the free time, so that I'm going to have a nice time there, or then it's the work. If it's in terms of labor, if I could work there, or in the terms of real estate market on investment, or to open a company. And the third aspect, also science, anthropology or educational science, border studies, so get to know the culture, but it's also the part of work, maybe work passion, so it's, yeah. Then I wrote a keyword, now it's not really structured, yeah, like art, it's always a part, art and architecture is the first thing maybe that we see, like with our eyes, that makes an impression of us. Landscape may be different, even the borders are actually in an artificial line built by people, and sometimes the artificial line is also like in the ocean or on the top of the mountains, that also the landscape change. So in Great Britain, Scotland and so on, sometimes I have the feeling that they the parts of Great Britain, they have really typical landscape. I don't know, not much about history of Great Britain. So I was thinking about, okay, maybe depending on the landscape, they build a state or something. Yeah, that they feel they belong to landscape, weather, then conflict. Current conflict or historical conflict in the political science or something. Then like the forbidden word, behind the border, the forbidden word or forbidden things, or the new world, new reality, new perception, new kind of people, different way of thinking. Also it's interesting like between the border, also from the medicine point of view, the also different sicknesses, the statistically. So for example, in the countries they have more sunshine, is less multiple sclerosis, or the regions more polluted, there is more cancer. Different way of life and thinking, different ways of choice and suffering, different ways of suffering. Yeah, so it's like before I was in the talks about borderline studies between US and Mexico. It was very, very interesting, and also how many parts of the human life are actually included in the border studies. That it can be like architecture, art, economical science, political science, educational science, geography, all kind of actually topics are here included. So it's really, really interesting, because now I found anthropology for me, and I really like it. And now today I was like thinking, okay, but border studies are actually really interesting too. So it's too many things that I'm losing myself in the world of science. But my family, they're 90% they're geologists in the natural science. Then I went to business, and now I'm going to the direction like philosophy. Okay. So it's now really new world for me. I'm not stopping anymore. Oh yeah, I have like 8 minutes more. That's really hard, because I think I'm talking also really quickly. So maybe I go back to summarize my personal perspective, because I think it's the most important thing now. When I first think of border, I think in my mind comes like some kind of border architecture, what's more horizontal and I have to think a little bit of Michel Foucault and the way of, how to say in English, Macht, the way of power over the people or power of the institution. And maybe when I come closer to the border, there is a weird feeling in the stomach a bit, you know, even if I don't say anything wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel the tension, and I think I feel the tension of the people. And then the people of the border are like really like a little bit like machines, literally administrative, sometimes cold. And sometimes really fun to be really nice and quite of fun and to see how they react and how they relax themselves. And then the first impression when we pass the border is of course the traffic system, like the different signs, different roads. I think it's the first comes in mind, and maybe like the architecture, landscape can maybe also different, other flowers, how do you say, like, not flower architecture, but there is a word like landscape architecture, I think you say. And then maybe driving and you look like the type of gas stations and the prices maybe, and you drive into the city. And the other thing is maybe the transportation or parking. Then you try the language maybe, or talk in English, and then maybe, and also I would say also fashion, how the people are dressed, facial expression, what kind of energy. Then I think I start to compare with the cliches or the thing I already know about the countries, how could it fit in the picture I have already in. Lately, I start to think about philosophy and how it fits in about the philosophical traditional philosophy in the country. And then slowly actually coming to the country. So it's kind of transition to a different world, but also it depends of my experiences and how familiar I'm with this different world. Maybe it's not so much different for me. And border is actually not only like fear of the institution, but also excitement of getting to know something new, to see something new, to broaden the perception. The most fascinating thing for me while traveling, crossing borders, are the local people. Not so much the architect, also the architecture are, but the local people, and to talk with them about the basic things and about their perception of life, how they see different things, how they feel, how they suffer, and it's really fascinating. Also in Asia, when they have a house from the newspaper and their pictures of the family to put in on the house, so they have the feeling they live in, it's like typical American house. So it's really fascinating because they have all the movies, all the American movies, and they live so differently, and how they perceive the Western world and their world. And it's the most fascinating thing for me. Actually, the ethno-psychoanalysis would be something I would be very interested for. But I think it's a little bit, a complicated topic also because of the Nazi theories from this time and so on. Because if we start psychoanalyze the cult, the people and all the differences, it may be different, but difficult. But I think it's the field that is now start to grow. I don't know. Because Vienna has a really not so nice tradition in this field. Let's see. 3 more minutes. Yeah. So border, the transition to a different world.
Experience.
To a different experience. Different world. To a different experience and perception.
Your
and my
have you got an experience?
Sorry, no?
Have you got an experience of a problematic?
A problematic like crossing of border? Actually, it was always really smooth. When I went to US as nanny, I had a really complicated flight that I had to like enter to US and leave and then enter again. I don't know how it was, but it was I would have to rethink, or it was like the Canada and US, and I don't know, but it was like two experiences. That one experience was really not friendly because they see like Slovakian passport and how long you stay and where and what are you doing, and like really like suspicious. And the other experience, it was a Mexican, like working as a Mexican, like but already like American, and he was like asking me where I live, and I say in Spain, which and we started to talk in Spanish, and he found it perfect that I speak Spanish and so on, and he was so friendly, and then he opened a different line for me, like a fast line for, I don't know, it was like really nice experience, because with the Spanish in America and on board, that he was really nice. Also, when I was driving through Switzerland to Spain, and also felt with the Slovakian passport that it's a little bit suspicious. So, yeah, because I don't think that Slovakian women have a really good reputation in Switzerland. Yeah, and it's also because I have a professor. He because I already have the master in the economics, and now I have the bachelor degree in educational science, and maybe possible that I can do a PhD in Zurich, because there is a professor that is really. He would really good suit, or his. I really like his fiat, but I really am afraid a bit of Switzerland because of this cliché towards Slovakian Czech woman, and I already suffered a lot in Austria because of this, and I don't think I would feel good in Switzerland, because it's harder, so they're thinking more about Spain or Singapore or not Europe. So yeah, but actually, maybe it was like in Asia sometimes, even if I'm EU, but Slovakian passport was like, what is it, you know, since it was like kind of, so they didn't know what to do with it. And actually I didn't have really bad experiences like crossing border. No. Actually quite friendly, and I think like young woman traveling alone is not... They are quite nice. Okay. Yeah. So I think I got it. Thank you for the question. It helped me.
No problem.
Yeah.
It's always interesting. I mean, to listen to also experiences. And
yeah.
I
don't have really a funny story or tragic story.
I have several, yeah. but I won't start with this. Probably I will try to.
So I put on start. Yep.
So. Okay. Well, I mean, borders for me. I first started to be interested in borders, probably. Long time ago, when I started to understand that geography matters in life, in daily life, for everyone. And I was really fascinated by maps when I was a child. Mm-hmm. Despite all of this, I did not become a geographer. I became a political scientist. Mm-hmm. Because I discovered that I was more interested by power and the question of not politics in itself, but the question of the political use of power. And I reconnected, let's say, less than 10 years ago, geography with political science. And this reconnection allowed me to question by many aspects borders, for me this is rather clear that borders are entities that are rather complex to understand, in the sense that they are on the one hand concrete and material elements, devices, systems, structures, I mean, put by states, I mean, obviously, and also arbitrary entities. And on the other hand, they are also, in the meantime, equally representations. There are no realities without any representation, of course. And therefore, it works very well also with borders. I always said to myself that borders can be, in the same time, open and closed. They look like closed we are talking about a closed border, because countries are, let's say, in a state of war, but there are always open gates somewhere. So borders are, and moreover, if they are closed for some people, they are open for others. So borders became like individual borders. And if you are a Palestinian refugee, I mean, obviously, you will find a lot of closed border on your route. If you are a Swiss citizen like me, I mean, with the Canadian, we are sharing the extreme privilege of having the two most open border passports on this planet. So this is this came rather quickly to my mind when I started to travel in the Middle East. 20 years ago. Because as a Swiss citizen, I mean, you are always like, I mean, most of the time you are welcome, and it's something that matters at some point. And for me, it has always been a topic of questioning, and that's the reason why probably I became also a scholar, because reality is not enough for me, so I always have to raise questions. So it's. And therefore, this question of borders became like a vantage ground for a vantage point to observe reality and to, delineate the relationship between people, from one side to the other side, but also inhabitants, borderlanders, inhabitants on one side. That can be of various profiles. People like refugees, residents, citizens, or international actors, like people from the UN. Where I'm working in the Middle East, actually in Lebanon, I can meet a lot of these various people in the same area, in borderland region. So it is enriching also the significance of the border, because for each of these categories of actors, the same border will have different meanings. And from this, it appeared rather clearly, that a border is not only a thing, it's not only an entity, it's probably more a process. It's a process because, obviously it's historically grounded, and it has an history. I mean, every border in Europe has its own history, and elsewhere in the world, and recent borders, old borders, colonial borders, they all have their impacts on people, on new generations, until nowadays. I mean, and we can see nowadays that there are many issues. I think about the Kurds straddling over several national borders without any proper nation. So it's one among many issues in the region I'm studying. And And when I'm saying a border is a process, it's something also that is related to the fact that it is changing. It is changing by itself somehow. Of course, not itself all alone. It is changing because the interaction among people around borders are also changing and evolving, redeploying. The requalification of borders are also a matter of extremely important impact. Let's think about East and West Germany. I mean, all of a sudden, I mean, this is the eruption of history in daily life of people. And this impact of history in daily life of normal people, normal citizens, has always been for me fascinating. Always been something that was an element of question. Also because probably I never suffered such a problem. I never faced migration issues. I never faced any type of, let's say, this human being condition that is shared by so many million people around the planet. But when you are lucky enough to be from one of the richest countries of this planet, I mean, there are many things that you don't see. And I always knew that I was blind somehow, so that was rather clear in my head. And I decided to start to open a little bit my eyes to, and probably thanks to borders, I decipher some new realities and started to understand a little bit more how a reality can be performed and produced by actors, a reality like that seems really strong and material and you know strong as the state that has enough power to impose its might to people. And in the Middle East, I mean, sometimes, I mean, when you say Middle Eastern states, you are thinking about authoritarian regime, and you are thinking about military powers, and you are thinking about weapons, and you are thinking about killings. And at some point, what can people do in front of this? I mean, normal people, I mean, without any weapon, without any power. And actually, this is one of the most fascinating thing I discover in all my researches is the fact that everywhere where I've been traveling, I've seen how this human genius capacity to recompose, to adapt in front of any type of difficulties, any type of walls. The image of wall is the image of being blocked at some point, and how people bypass obstacles, how they find ways to cope with and to go beyond and to transform what is immediately seen as an obstacle into a resource. And I have to say that border as a resource, I was at first really skeptical because I used to be aware of balance of power. I used to know that who is in charge, who is in command, and who's got the power and who are the weaks. I mean, on the other hand, borders help me to go beyond, and just to go beyond this, let's say, division of the world between the mighty and the dominated ones, and to understand that, I mean, things are a little bit more complicated than this. Of course, on both sides, you have those who are, in charge, in command, who have capacities to create more than others. And on both sides, you have people who are, less powerful, less resourceful, also in terms of education, in terms of financial resources, whatsoever. But moreover, these sides of, these both sides are blurred in borderland region. And this is interesting because borders are revealing blurred, the blurring of categories. And this is something that has to be linked to the idea of the border as the border region, the borderlands region, and the border zone as space of exceptions regarding the rest of the nation state. Unusual spaces, not exception, but probably unusual spaces. And these unusual spaces are changing somehow the use of categories. The mighty, as well as the poor, when they are reaching the borders, are facing sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, the same consequences. The same consequences in front of what is beyond the border. It depends where, of course, not all the borders. And it depends also when. And this is also really interesting because in time, when time passes, you have, changes into these categories. So borders are allowing you to understand that categories are changing throughout time. At some point, the example is rather clear with the Syrian border with Lebanon. At some point, for Syrian citizens, going to Lebanon was extremely easy. In order to work, to go there to work, I mean, basically during the 90s, even before. These experiences were rather common, and 500,000 of Syrian workers were working in Lebanon during the 90s. After the eruption of the civil war in 2011 in Syria, slowly, step by step, the border became a closed border, even for them. And they changed the category. I mean, from neighbors, welcome neighbors, they became the burden for the Lebanese. The Syrian became the burden. A burden for the Lebanese, and they were somehow stopped at the border, refrained from a free entrance, and there are now a huge amount of categories of permit in order to enter Lebanon. So it is becoming like a nightmare, I mean, for a Syrian citizen who is actually fleeing, problems, wars, persecution, maybe. But still, I mean, the Lebanese border nowadays is closed. I mean, it's really difficult to enter, unless you have the right paper, unless you are in transit in Lebanon and you can prove it. And so, it's at my view an excellent lesson of what the border can bring to the knowledge, the understanding of the changing categories, changing a change in the meaning of what a category is. So it is highlighting the fact that things are not written once and for all. I mean, maybe today I'm a really privileged citizen of this planet as a Swiss person, but maybe in another day, tomorrow, let's say, not maybe immediately tomorrow, but let's say after tomorrow, who knows what would happen. So it is helping us somehow. I mean, this border question is helping. At least it's helping me to connect. I mean, every type of actors from here, from there, refugees as well as wealthy citizens, in order to understand how we belong to somehow a cross-border space before being divided and classified into let's say national categories and religious categories and socio-economical categories and whatever other type of ethnical categories, of course, and that how all these categories are impacting the lives of everyone, probably a little bit more the moment you are crossing a border. I mean, the border is revealing your categories, the category you belong to. And so, but it is also, for a social scientist, it is revealing how complex the building of these categories are, and how unfixed they are, and that they can also change, as well as border regime. And the moment a border regime is changing, it's a really turning point that is worth observing, and providing a lot of lessons for everyone. I mean, and people are everyone is clever enough in order to understand how good or how bad it is. I mean, for him, for her, everywhere I travel, and every people I talk to, it's really interesting how it is impacting life, and how it is not something that is you know, natural. I mean, all borders are artificial, even like rivers, a border like that is along the river. I mean, it's a decision that is a political decision to decide that the river is defining the border. I mean, you can also put the border on the other side of the river. That's exactly what did happen, I mean, between Iran and Iraq in the Chatt el-Arab. And that's the reason why, I mean, at some point they decided to negotiate, I mean, to put the border in the middle of the water, in the middle of the river. Borders can be realities that can reveal or that can provide resource for peace as well as resources for war. And nowadays it's a matter of interesting concern for everyone. But what interests me more probably is the impact on the daily life.
Nice, we are really good in time. Perfect. You are giving classes as well, no? You are working as a professor, so you know when 20 minutes are over.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, 20 minutes. Is, yeah. 20 minutes. It's always a. I mean, it's a normal scholar time
yeah.
lapse, and
you get a feeling. I'm here lost. I'm always on it. Today I didn't talk for so long because I didn't want to do a paper or something because it should be like my impression. And normally when I'm always running out of time.
Yeah, this question of time is always interesting. It's time is like space. Mm-hmm. It's a question of perception.
Yeah.
It's always, it's in the meantime something that we can learn. We are learning space, we are learning boundaries, And when we are a child, we are discovering space and boundaries of the known world and the unknown world.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a child, I grew up in the middle of in a suburb that was located in the middle of two forests. Really fascinating. I mean, as a geographical setting, and also a visual landscape that really matters in terms of the known world, the unknown space, and the boundaries of what is acceptable, what is a little bit blurred, and what is probably dangerous.
Did you perceive these two forests differently?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. So maybe there it began this passion for borders and the coming from one world into another.
Yeah, and symbolically it's interesting to cross for the first time, I mean maybe not only for the first time, but to cross a forest like that and to enter into another zone. And I started, when I was a teenager, I started to have friends on the other side of one of the forest. That was a small forest, by the way, not something, I mean, so huge. It was something also interesting because it appears to be related at some point with the discovery of gender relationship and my first girlfriend was somebody who was living on the other side of
the other side.
So that was really really fascinating.
Cover sheet, or maybe we are already doing dialogue, so it doesn't mean no.
And there, I discover the idea of crossing a space as a ritual.
As a ritual, okay, yeah.
The idea that when you are crossing from a place to another, there is a ritual, I mean something is happening, something that is difficult to describe, something that is related also somehow of what you were saying in terms of experience, when you have something in the stomach, something that is, you know, that you are in an in between space, that you are crossing something.
Yeah, you feel it, yeah.
And you feel, and also the representation of the forest. I mean, despite all the knowledge that I didn't have at that time about what is a forest.
Yeah.
But well, I mean, the idea of crossing the forest to meet my girlfriend, and to know her a little bit more, to have and to discover something like sexuality. I mean, that was something really fascinating, and probably related to a ritual. A rite of passage, probably, also.
So into a new world, regarding many topics.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
so that's probably also at some point why, I mean, I get somehow a little bit inspired by the idea of borders and of, let's say, more boundaries instead of really geopolitical borders. I mean, this type of boundaries, rather material, by the way, I mean, but also I discover on the other side of the forest, I discover the new school where I went when I was a teenager, and I discover another boundary, the socioeconomic boundaries that separated me from some other scholars, some other students at that
time. Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I was not from the same world.
Okay.
So that was really interesting.
And where did you study, or how?
That was just tiny differences between the suburb where I grew up, where
okay.
I was
okay.
from,
okay.
and the wealthy suburbs
okay. Okay.
Where
yeah,
they were
yeah.
from.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I discover yeah. I discovered that when I was a teenager on the other side
okay.
of the forest.
Okay. From the other side. It's like in New York, you are from the other side of the river, so it happens in Switzerland too. You're in a small country, you are from the suburbs, right? It's interesting. Your key message, in my perception, were categories. Like the border represent different categories,
mm-hmm.
and that the categories are changing, right? In the morning, there were some workshop, I would say, like, I don't know what workshop, but talks regarding this new culture, a new type of world, which is now come word to Spanish, because I have a visit of Spain here for 2 weeks, and all the time comes Spanish words to my mind. That in the U.S. Mexican border, there is a new culture, neither Mexican nor American. For example, when you go to San Diego, to this first city, that the Mexican would never consider the city as Mexico. That is, it's the U.S. Although it's already in Mexico. So how do you see this topic? Because then you don't have really two categories, but there is a new category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's probably due to the fact that time passes,
mm-hmm.
and new generations emerged. Mexican people were living and working on the U.S. side of the border.
Mm-hmm.
Got some grew up. Some children grew up in this environment,
mm-hmm.
on the American side,
mm-hmm.
and they became double national. That's an example. Mixed marriages
yeah.
also
yeah.
are other
yeah.
examples.
Yeah,
and slowly, step by step, the intermingling of
mm-hmm.
categories
mm-hmm.
are producing new categories.
Yeah.
New categories, which is something interesting, because new categories are means that the border is producing another category.
Yeah.
Instead
yeah.
of dismissing previous categories,
yeah,
it is creating
yeah.
another one.
Yeah, 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 true.
And so the border is, from this point of view, is a rather interesting entity, because it exists as a process in itself, as a bureaucratic process in itself, and it's something like there is nothing magical in this. It's totally understandable, and one can explain this process, but still it's nobody's fault.
Yeah.
At some point, there is a brand new category that is appearing, also because it is more useful. If you have only one or two, mixed national or double national people,
mm-hmm.
okay, fine. You won't need to create a category, but the moment you need to fluidify the border crossing. There are a lot of people that are crossing this type of border. You need to find ways that categories are responding or corresponding to the more to the type of people that are crossing.
Mm-hmm.
All at a sudden, if we had. If we see the arrival of 1.5 million Chinese living in El Paso, on this spot of the Mexican-US border, they will create a special category and a special route for them in order to fluidify.
It's very fascinating because the most people would think it's a simple bureaucratic process, but it affects so much human life and culture, and new categories are born and so on. You are a political scientist, right?
Yeah.
I can give you a philosophical, very wide open question. When from one day to another, there would be no borders anymore, no bureaucratic borders, mm-hmm. and the labor market would be open, mm-hmm. what, in your opinion, would happen with the world?
What would
Where
happen?
The people would go, or what agglomerations would erase?
Well, I mean...
Which movements?
Mm-hmm.
Because we always talk from the Austrian point of view or from the European point of view, all the Syrians want to come here.
Yeah.
But always say no borders, open labor market and no war.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Only maybe to have only economic refugees, we say. You know, no wars, mm-hmm. no borders and open labor market. What do you think, which movements would happen in the world?
Oh. And during the first moment, I guess things would be chaotic.
Yeah.
During a first moment. I mean, of course, because that would be, unless it would be a long process of no wars on this planet, which is something. I mean, that would be like the ultimate revolution.
If it's easier to answer the question with wars, it's okay.
Yeah. And then. The related question to borders is the question of power.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who would be the leading political power on this
mm-hmm.
planet?
Mm-hmm.
So that the
People
answer
feel safe.
The answer would be a sort of planet council that would meet on a regular basis and in order to administer. Because I mean, in mankind history, I mean, there is no human beings without organization of power mm-hmm. somehow. So this is something that is related to human beings. So at some point we can think about this type of, and therefore, I would bet on a recategorization process.
Yeah.
I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I'm afraid that after the first chaotic moment, a new recomposition based on I don't know, maybe economical hub
mm-hmm.
Where that are more dynamic than others,
mm-hmm.
and probably a new recomposition of the world.
Well.
Less center maybe on the US and a little bit
mm-hmm.
more center on Asia or
mm-hmm.
I don't know and on some other spaces or South America also
mm-hmm.
and in Africa in another way but I mean Africa without wars would mean a lot of interesting things.
And when we keep the wars and there is open labor market and no borders, you think all the people from Africa would come to Europe, for example?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily, because with or without borders, those who need to leave are leaving.
Yeah.
And so I'm not really sure that the map would be really different without
mm-hmm.
borders in terms of migration.
Mm-hmm.
But what would be a necessity, therefore, without borders, is the capacity of adaptation
mm-hmm.
of new hubs where people would seek, let's say, with some safe haven, and therefore. We would not be in the same state of mind that we are nowadays. Hidden behind a nationalistic vision of our countries, our states, and this growing discourses still growing, and it can grow more. It's a disaster, but that's the truth. Without borders, it would push every government to find other ways to do it, other ways to deal with such migration, also probably other ways to solve wars over there, wherever it is over there. And then that would probably also create a sort of push for more peaceful solutions.
Okay. And what do you think would happen with the cultures? You think there will be some regions or countries where nobody would stay anymore, or that we would be such a mixture of different nations and cultures, and the idea of national identity would be lost? Or you think that the people actually have a strong, how to say, from a tree, the
roots,
yeah, the strong roots, that they will not move as much as we think from the Western world, that all the people would come here?
Yeah, I strongly believe that everyone has roots, and everyone is not belongs, because I don't like very much this term, but has an origin, first, a geographical origin. I mean, that's as simple as that. And then a bond that is linking him/her to a place. In particular, then if you can travel, if it's possible to travel, if it's even promoted, I mean, in the academia, we are fortunate enough to have this type of vision, discourses, and promotion. You have to cross borders, you have to learn from others, you have to live in various universities. I took it for granted myself, so that's the reason why I've worked in 15 universities now.
Nice.
So it's.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I mean, sometimes I'm wondering, where do I belong? I mean, actually, I know where I'm from. So I believe, I strongly believe that in this type of landscape, despite the fact that everyone would be able to travel and to find jobs elsewhere, almost everywhere, things would be a little bit more fair somehow, in terms of identity, in terms of the capacity to bring something with you and to continue the road, and to be somehow a little bit more citizen of the planet, and maybe a little bit more aware of your environment, human as well as natural environment, a little bit more connected to the others. I mean, close people. I mean, just the next door neighbors. You start with this, and the trees around you. I mean, I don't know the trees or whatever. I mean,
people would be less opportunistic, like less individual, and it would be like more based on community.
Probably more connected to a close environment, because closed environment are. The environment that matters very much at the end of the day, on a daily basis. And we are living on a daily basis, I mean, as far as I know, and I've spent some time in various locations, and each time I said to myself, well, I mean, I'm feeling more comfortable here when compared to there. It's not because, I mean, the university is better, or the university is poor. It's because I'm feeling good in this environment, and I feel this a little bit less good in other environment due to personal, I mean, feelings.
Which environment you feel the best?
Mediterranean environment.
Me too.
by the sea, I have to confess. I'm not coming from a sea country, so it was also a discovery for me.
Yeah.
And the Mediterranean also because of the food,
yeah.
The type of food. I'm feeling more comfortable with this. I like very much fish. I discover
mm-hmm.
fishes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and all the sea byproducts when I was in the 20s,
mm-hmm.
not before. So I mean, that was also a revolution for me. so I became somebody else. I mean, slowly, step by step, and that was pretty good also to explore, to discover, and to accept also the idea that you're feeling better there
mm-hmm.
instead of your
yeah.
original
yeah.
home.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
And this is somehow a little bit disturbing,
mm-hmm.
but why not? At some point, why not?
So you didn't miss the Alps and high mountains in the Mediterranean area?
No, I did not miss them that much. I like very much to go back,
yeah.
to hike a little bit, to
yeah.
see friends, of course, because
yeah.
I still have a lot of friends there. But I mean, when it comes to landscape and mountains, I mean, well, you can also find other landscape, other mountains in the Mediterranean region. And
I have the impression that the nature in the Mediterranean relaxes me more than in the Alps. Also the color of the trees, because in Alps it's like dark green,
mm-hmm.
and so also the color of the trees is already like light green, and the ground is sometimes a light orange, you know, like sort of really beige orange, and then with this blue sky, and when you hike close to the sea, so you have like blue, light green, orange, then sunshine. It relaxes me a lot. I love also hiking in the Alps, but it's something more direction or skiing or maybe extreme sport, like hiking, like really. But really like relaxing, I also relax more in the Mediterranean nature.
Mm. Yeah, probably, yes.
My boyfriend is climbing like really extremely, and he has a theory, it's a really interesting theory, that the nature in the Alps is changing a lot, has a lot of extreme, like really hard winter and hot summer and so on. So the nature has a lot of power. And a lot of stress power and has to overcome a lot of obstacles.
Mm.
And the Mediterranean nature is more stable.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I feel this kind of energy or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very interesting idea. So it was like, okay, I never thought of that.
Yeah, it's more mineral also, I mean, in the Alps.
Yeah.
I mean, above 2,000 meters above the sea
yeah.
level, you don't have any trees anymore,
mm-hmm.
and then you are entering in the mineral environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's rocks basically,
mm-hmm.
and I remember I liked very much
mm-hmm.
walking in such an environment, like that is not like the moon, because I discovered
mm-hmm.
that when you are climbing in on a volcano, this is the moon. I mean,
yeah.
but this is a little bit different. This is a strong and a tough environment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is somehow brutal,
mm-hmm.
because the rock is
mm-hmm.
Is something, far from human. I mean, this is the transformation
yeah,
of something.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
the rock.
Yeah.
It's a long process, a mineral process, and so. It is the raw material of earth,
mm-hmm.
Somehow. I see it like that. I mean, maybe it's not totally exact, I mean, from the geological point of view, but it's something I found it refreshing, in the sense that it is erasing all that you knew before. And
mm-hmm.
it is providing you with a new landscape around that
yeah.
is something unseen before
yeah,
for
yeah.
you. And this is, okay, and then you are breathing a little bit better also,
mm-hmm.
I mean, high
yeah,
altitude.
Yeah, yeah.
And in Switzerland we have a lot of mountains above 2,000.
Yeah.
Actually,
my boyfriend goes Friday to Switzerland with his parents to hike. They do it every year. Like tradition.
Okay. Yeah, so that's and then I discover that another landscape exists, and I felt actually more comfortable. When compared to Alps and high altitude.
It's like Mediterranean.
The Mediterranean, yeah. And how warm, the question of temperature, how warm it is. And I discovered that I like so much when it's warm. Despite
really
the fact that I'm sweating easily. But it's not a big deal. I mean, actually, I'm feeling better also in breathing. I'm feeling better in... with
more
the body.
More sunshine, like D3, it's...
Yeah, and the energy
lot,
that is provided by the sun.
Yeah.
I've spent several years in Oxford, so...
In
Oxford, I mean, you don't have that much sun.
Yeah.
Of the English weather.
Yeah.
And so it can be a little bit rainy.
Yeah.
A little bit more rainy than in Switzerland. I just came back from the Middle East, several years in the Middle East, arriving immediately in Oxford. So I have to say that the shock was somehow a little bit difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I get used to have a lot of sun, to get something like 60 days of sun a year.
Oh, okay.
300 days of sun a year and only 60 days of...
I thought 60 days of sun in Oxford, but you're talking 300 days of sun.
Yeah, I was talking about what I had as an experience. And also, I mean, the temperature of the body changed. I mean, what the body is used to. So the impact of environment is definitely strong and on us.
Yeah.
It has a grip on us. It is ruling somehow how we feel our environment, how we perceive our environment.
Yeah.
And this is another great lesson. I mean,
Morton Sea, I love in the Mediterranean area this small historical city with these small streets. And the flowers, I love this, like Paris, London is like big street, like these small streets and these plazas with no cars. I really like that. And it's really normal that you go for a coffee also alone, and you sit alone, drink coffee, look around. And this is already like a little bit weird, but not so much, but there is more normal that you just sit alone and drink coffee.
You're right, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's probably the reason why. I mean, I also enjoy so much a city like Venice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm traveling. I'm working in Venice once 1 week every year for now more than 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so
one day in a week more than 15 years.
Yes, yes.
So always fly in, even if you are in Middle East or.
Yes, yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's one week every year.
One week every year. I understood one day in a week. Sorry, I'm really tired.
No.
1 week in a year. Okay.
One week in a year, and for a master or 10 days, let's say, or something like
okay.
that. And it's fascinating. I mean, because I discovered that, I mean, this city is like a Medina.
Mm-hmm.
In Morocco, or an oriental city, it's a Medina on the water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, actually, you flooded the Medina of Fez, and you get Venice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somehow, it's really funny. And it is fascinating also because it is a sort of disruption in by comparison with the long avenue that we have in Western big cities.
Yeah.
And this type of disruption, this type of narrow passages, and this type of intimacy. The intimacy also that we can feel ourselves with space, with the environment.
I'm such a big street, it's also like a power element.
Oh yes. Yeah.
And if you're like such a small street, a small plaza with no cars, you feel like...
And you can feel, I mean, you feel a little bit more that the environment, it is at your own scale. I mean, in front of the Empire State Building, I mean, this is not human scale. I mean, this is a gigantic scale.
Yeah.
So this type of relationship with the environment is it's another boundary somehow.
It's a really nice thing what you said. I haven't seen it this way. It's really a new insight that it's that the buildings in Mediterranean cities are more at human scale, that they are not such huge and you feel more comfortable because one person, one family can build it, but such a big building, no, you need a big machines and machinery and a lot of institutional power. And okay, never thought of that. This is really, thank you for that. I have a reason more when somebody asks me why I want to live in Spain. I have a reason more to say, and it's really scientific. A political scientist told it to me. Thank you.
No, it's
I think we are quite a bit over the time, and
okay.
May I ask you a last question? I'm
yes,
really
yes,
interested
yes.
in, because you are an expert in Middle East,
yes.
And actually I have to admit I don't know much about it, only from the media, I don't think it's really a good picture. I have a colleague, he's also from Switzerland, he's now talking to me all the time because he's now started to read books of history from the point of view of Middle East, where it's really like Middle East is the center of the world and Europe is like one country somewhere. So also the history that we learn is also our point of view and our perspective. So if, I don't know, if you have time, if you would maybe 5 minutes to wrap up Middle East, or maybe like the topic of borders of Middle East, like for someone who doesn't know anything about it, like the relations between, or maybe the conflict a bit.
One thing that is actually having a great imprint on today's fate of states in the Middle East is the origin of borders in the region, and the strong imprint of the colonial era and the division of the former Ottoman Empire at the beginning of the 20th century into zones of influence shared between France and Great Britain, basically. And this type of division led to the creation, almost in abstracto, the creation of artificial states, artificial national border divisions. When it comes to Lebanon, and detached from Syria, or the north of Iraq detached from other parts where Kurds were living. The artificial creation of Iraq, putting together Sunnis, Shias in the south and Kurds in the north for the purpose of the colonial purpose of Great Britain on the route of India, and also the strong British imprint of on the Gulf states that became independent only late 60s, early 70s. It's really, really late.
You always hear this also from the Athan, from not from foreign media, but for example from the little Middle East. They live here and they're at home. Political science. They always say that it's our fault because all the conflicts and so on.
Yeah.
And I actually don't understand it so much because it didn't. Well,
yeah.
There's a France, Great Britain, USA, so everybody has their interests there and are influencing massively.
Yeah,
like and
they absolutely, and they totally messed up with this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the creation of Israel instead of giving Palestinians. It's something that is extremely cruel, as extremely instrumental. also from the British. And I know, I even know some British colleagues, they start their speeches by apologizing for what did happen, I mean, in the early 20th century. Even if, of course, it is obviously not their fault.
Yeah.
It's like if the German were apologizing for Holocaust, okay?
Yeah.
But just to say that from the mindset of a political scientist of Middle Eastern studies, it is absolutely true that the West and Western great powers did harm the environment, the human environment, and created a nurture recipe for conflict. And actually, after that, of course, local forces, local powers, knew some structurations, a process of militarization of power, and the arrival in power of some generals, authoritarian regimes that were using also the presence of Israel as a way to maybe to avoid of doing good things in their society. I mean, claiming for war and struggle against Israel instead of struggling for the improvement of the wealth of the society, of their society. I'm not saying that it was not a it was a bad idea to claim the right of the Palestinians, but I mean everybody at the end of the day, and we know that in the 20th century, I mean all the Arab countries used the Palestinian questions and the Palestinians in order to do something that was really far from liberating Palestine. And they were unable to liberate Palestine, by the way. And those who succeed more to do something were the Palestinians themselves. And of course, I mean, but they also had, these poor Palestinians had to struggle against some of the Arab countries that they claimed to be their best friends. So it's really
very complicated.
Yeah.
Very
complex. So there are many levels.
Mm-hmm.
Plus
mm-hmm.
the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
During 40 years you have this sort of division of the world that mask somehow internal divisions, that mask also genuine struggles for freedom. Behind big words like free world versus communism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really unfair for Karl Marx. I'm sorry to say that.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's unfair also for Keynes. The great economist. So it's okay. So this type of polarities really undermine the capacity for local societies to be. To develop and to get rid of authoritarian regimes, and authoritarian regimes used to feed themselves with wars, with tensions, with this type of geopolitical polarities, and we are continuing this way, by the way. We had great expectation in 2011 with the Arab uprising.
Okay.
When we saw that, I mean, genuinely, people were decided to say no to authoritarian regimes, and that was fantastic.
We were absolutely
fascinated, and we were also skeptical.
Yeah.
I mean, many of us were skeptical, skeptical, not in the sense that people were wrong, not in the sense that this is not going to provide with results, interesting results, but with the fact that it might take a really long time. It's a long process, and so 2010, 2011, it's the beginning of something that is going to last. It's the beginning of another process, self-conscious of the society to be able to take the lead and to take their fate in their own hands, and to say no to a lack of dignity, to say no to the inevitability of authoritarian regime, to build the society they want somehow. But this road is really long.
The research in the Middle East or the university, how developed are they, or are you working also together with them also to receive their perception? Because I always ask, because also what the media say something very different, and the university, I think they have much more insight, and it's so complicated, and they don't even know who is his who is collaborating with who. So you are collaborating also with universities from there.
Yeah, I'm working with colleagues in various universities. I mean, not that much, but let's say two or three universities.
And are they willing to? Do they speak good? Are they willing to collaborate? And do they speak good English?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I mean, in Lebanon, that's not a problem.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But most of the time, I mean, you find a lot of people of goodwill. And of course, in authoritarian regime, you will also find a side of people of goodwill. People who are the guardian of the temple.
Yeah,
I mean, in the upper level of hierarchy of the universities, and then it's really difficult to continue to work.
So the academic freedom, how is it given?
Yeah, it's a long process ahead. Still, I mean, there is no miracle. I mean, in authoritarian regime, you can hardly have a free speech. University spaces that are lasting. I mean, they've got some ups and downs, as we can see in Turkey nowadays.
Okay.
And it's a real pity what is happening in Turkey, and it's a disaster for university. But despite all of that, at least you can find everywhere. I mean, I choose to believe that also. You can find individuals where you can work with.
Yeah.
And you can really do things, and that's the reason why, I mean, I decided to launch this this research on border lenders in Lebanon with a colleague of mine in at the University of Saint-Joseph. Not because they are absolutely great and good and whatsoever, but because have found some people of goodwill.
Yeah.
And I know at the end of the day that I'm not working only with an institution, I'm working with some people. We need to bring up to build confidence, to build knowledge. And to build knowledge you need to have a minimum of confidence, a minimum of good, nice interaction, a trust, I really value this, and academia provided to me, I mean, excellent environment to choose my friends.
Okay.
So, I'm feeling extremely fortunate because I have a huge amount of friends around the planet, and I'm working with them.
Yeah, that's very nice.
That's pretty good.
Wow, that's very nice. I have a last question. since the Middle East conflict is so complicated, for example, are the universities or I know it's complicated because you have national universities and national academia, mm-hmm. for example, to provide people from there, from the university, like really good scientists with grants, bring them to the Europe, and for example, give them like a good opportunity to do research in freedom about their own country, mm-hmm. and then this new research would actually, from this new research, would benefit all the world or all the scientific community. To understand better the Middle East conflict, or is it from because of all the power war topics and what the United States are doing, or is it like forbidden, or is it not like, or it's happening something, this direction is like only idea from someone who doesn't know anything about this
field. You're right, it is happening. I mean, on a regular basis, one can see in France as well as in Great Britain or in the US, of course, scholars from Middle Eastern countries that are doing PhDs,
okay.
in Western universities, mm-hmm. Great universities, great PhDs actually,
okay, yeah.
Fantastic fieldwork research, sometimes revealing fieldwork research for mm-hmm. them, I mean, revealing their country for them. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes extremely
yeah.
difficult also because they these scholars are learning like us, like everyone at university. They are learning how to build a scientific reasoning mm-hmm. in social sciences, which means that you have to put
your opinion behind
mm-hmm. yes, and to accept somehow that. What you thought was wrong,
yeah,
and
yeah.
that maybe, maybe things are not as good or as bad. And at the end of the day, that you have to accept the idea that you can learn mm-hmm. from sometimes people that just don't know how to write. But you just listen to what they have to say without judgment.
Yeah.
We are not
yeah.
here to judge anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are here to understand, I mean, how reality
is. Do you have students from Middle East?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. And it can happen with students from the Middle East. I would say more and more often.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very good thing because, at the end of the day, students from the Middle East are helping us to know more
yeah.
and to understand better
yeah.
their societies, and I'm waiting for the moment in a near future where students from the Middle East will start to study Western countries.
yeah, it would be nice.
Yeah. That will be revealing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
for us,
yeah,
that is
yeah.
going to be a key moment
yeah.
in
yeah.
the production of knowledge.
Yeah.
And
so Europe also did a long process of to let all the political systems grow. I found it really interesting to see when the monarchies failed, and with the French Revolution, and how the education system actually supporting the building of a system, the building of the constitution, to building a loyal citizen, to building the trust and love of the fatherland, and how every country did it differently, and had also the political languages that are also connected to religious languages. I don't know if you know Daniel Turrilo, he's also from Switzerland, he's my favorite professor.
Okay.
He writes really great papers of educational philosophy in this direction. It's really nice, also it's very political, and he gives a big picture of the things, and yeah, and then he talks about the Sputnik shock, what a shock was it for the US that the mm-hmm. Communists were first in the space, and then was the time, because before that it was the education of John Dewey, that more practical and also like Marta Nussbaum, the Yugoslavian Modula, it was more in this direction. And then with the Sputnik shock, all the subjects, the direction, foreign language and mathematics, natural sciences, technology, NASA was grounded up. I find this a big generalist, and I found interesting these independences and how it works and so on. It's very complex, but it's very, very interesting. I thank you for your time. I think I stole a lot of your time. Sorry. I will ask you even more and more.
No problem.
Thank you very much.
My
very
pleasure.
Interesting for me.
I just
to
hope
learn
that
so much.
Everything was recorded.
Yeah.
And that was great. And also a great experience.